It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley took aim at Iran and its proxy militia Hezbollah, saying the United States would act against what she called a growing menace. U.S. Ambassador's comments came after U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called Iran the world's leading sponsor of terrorism, responsible for conflicts in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, and warned it is beginning to look a lot like Korea's path. At a Thursday news conference, President Trump addressed the 2015 Iran nuclear deal.
It was a terrible agreement. It shouldn't have been signed. It shouldn't have been negotiated the way it was negotiated. I'm all for agreements, but that was a bad one, as bad as I've ever seen negotiated. They are not living up to the spirit of the agreement, I can tell you that. And we're analyzing it very, very carefully, and we'll have something to say about it in the not-too-distant future.
In February, the Trump administration designated for sanctions 25 individuals and entities for their support of Iran's ballistic missile program. United Nations Security Council has strongly condemned the most recent failed ballistic missile test by North Korea, blaming Pyongyang for what they said were increased tensions in the region and beyond. Security Council's stand comes as the Trump administration signals it's running out of patience with North Korea, which continues to develop its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. French President François Hollande says all signs point to terrorism and an attack on the Champs-Élysées in Paris that killed one policeman late Thursday and wounded two others, the Islamic State claiming responsibility through its news agency. This is VOA News. United Nations Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, says U.S., Russian, and U.N. trilateral talks on Syria, which were scheduled for Monday, have been postponed. He said also that he doesn't know why the United States has decided not to turn up at the meeting early next week, but believes Washington remains committed to the three-way discussions on the Syrian situation.
I would say that the indications I got from Washington is exactly that, that there is clearly an intention to maintain and resume these trilateral meetings, and the date and the circumstances were not conducive for this to happen on Monday, but that is certainly their intention.
In the meantime, de Mistura said he will be holding what he calls our very intense bilateral meetings on Monday with Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Gennady Gatilov. He says there are many things to discuss regarding the upcoming meeting in the Kazakh capital and on the Geneva peace talks. He says he will be carefully watching developments on the ground to make sure the talks, which are to resume sometime in May, have the best possible chance of success. World finance leaders have defended globalization against what they called an assault from President Trump and European populists. They argue that their blocking free trade would hobble economic growth instead of saving jobs from foreign competition. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim told journalists that freer trade and more openness were critical for the future of the world. Christine Lagarde is the managing director of the International Monetary Fund. She spoke with reporters about economic growth.
We are forecasting growth in 2017 at 3.5% and 2018 at 3.6%. And that's a significant uptick from 2016, which was only at 3.1%.
Lagarde and Kim spoke at the opening of 3 days of discussions among global financial leaders representing the 189 countries that are members of the IMF and its sister lending organization, the World Bank. U.S. sources have told CNN that they have prepared charges against Julian Assange, the Australian whistleblower who founded WikiLeaks. U.S. Justice Department has been investigating Assange since at least 2010, when WikiLeaks published thousands of stolen U.S. security files. U.S. intelligence agencies say Russia used WikiLeaks to publish emails by former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton in the run-up to last year's presidential election.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, April 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan judges threaten to strike next week if their demands are not met.
Honorable Chief Justice Chan Richmadud must resign from his post. Provision of cars for justices and judges for their transportation, provision of stationaries, and creation of conducive working environment.
That's Justice Jerry Raimondo of the South Sudan Court of Appeals. Sudan and Egypt agreed not to harbor each other's opposition groups, teaching tolerance in Central African Republic through Brazilian martial art and dance. And Sierra Leone's main opposition party rejects the extension of voter registration date.
We are against it not because we don't want people to exercise their franchise, but because in the first place we told this nation that the census was cooked. Now, because the census was cooked by the ruling government, we cannot get the projected figure of those who are supposed to register.
Dixon Rogers is a parliamentarian from the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. And Liberian youth are participating in Global Youth Service Day today, Friday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan judges have threatened to strike next week if their demands are not met. They want President Salva Kiir to fire the country's chief justice and increase the salaries of judges across the country. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
At a news conference held at the judiciary headquarters in Juba, judges told the reporters that their living conditions have deteriorated due to poor leadership at the institution. The judges blame South Sudan's Chief Justice Chan Richmadut for not addressing the issues affecting judges across the country. Justice Gary Raimondo with the South Sudan Court of Appeals read a joint statement on behalf of his colleagues at the judiciary.
The Honorable Chief Justice never conducts any single meeting with the members of the Supreme Court to discuss problems of the judiciary, which resulted into no transparency, no check and balance. There is also mismanagement of judiciary of South Sudan assets and human resources. We have reached to the extent that more than 4 judges sharing one courtroom.
Justice Raimondo says there are only 3 vehicles providing transportation for 62 judges in Juba to arrive at their places of work. He says 5 other vehicles donated by President Salva Kiir have all broken down and are not being serviced. The judges have given the government until next week to address their concerns. Justice Raimondo read from a list of the judges' demands.
The Honorable Chief Justice Chan Richmadut must resign from his post. Provision of cars for justices and judges for their transportation, provision of stationaries and creation of conducive working environment, creation of court rooms to each and every judge, appointment of judges and adequate of supporting staff, establishment of court police unit, an increment of court police in various courts, increment of judges' salaries with immediate effect.
Raimondo says a junior judge in the judiciary receives 4,000 South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to $22. The judges are also demanding pay rises and additional allowances for uniforms, health insurances, and legislation to enact pensions for 274 judges across South Sudan. Justice Khalid Muhammad Abdallah is the chairperson of the Justices and Judges Committee of the Judiciary of South Sudan. He says the country's economic crisis has affected the image of the judiciary.
We generate income as a judiciary, but our main problem is that this situation is created by Chief Justice because we are lacking transparency.
Abdallah says the working environment at the judiciary and the ongoing economic crisis could compromise the independence of the institution.
Because of this situation, the judges will run into corruption. This is our fear. This is our main fear now. And we can notice the public are starting talking about the judiciary, the behavior of judges. I'm not accusing my colleagues, but I think there is something like this happening, corruption. This is why we are trying, you know, to correct this situation as quick as possible.
South Sudan in Focus called the Chief Justice Chan Richmadut for a comment. Justice Madut called the press conference illegal and said he could not comment on the issue over the phone. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
Sudan and Egypt have agreed to stop supporting opposition groups fighting their respective governments. This came Thursday during a visit to Khartoum by Egyptian Foreign Minister Sami Shoukry. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir had in the past accused Egypt of supporting Sudanese opposition groups. On the other hand, Egypt's media have accused Sudan of harboring members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Sudanese Information Minister Hakmé Bilal says the two countries have had their differences in the past but have tried to resolve them through the United Nations. He blamed the Egyptian private media for heightening tension between the two countries.
As you know, there is some sort of tension between the two countries due to the media. This was actually from the side of Egypt, especially the private media, not the official. And this thing was actually some sort of provocative and insulting to the Sudanese as well and their dignity. We have actually some sort of different views about areas, this the triangle of Halaib and Salatin. As for us, this is our Sudanese land occupied by Egypt. And we have complained, we renew it annually in the Security Council. And we think the only solution for that would be through dialogue and direct contacts. So the visit of the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Egypt to Sudan to calm down and to ease these tensions between the two countries, I think it was very successful. A lot of actually points of interest between the two countries, also the trade. We have some regulations about the food coming from Egypt, and this should not be reflected as a political issue. But it is an ordinary right for us to be sure that the food getting from Egypt is good and useful and for humans.
Mr. Minister, has your country, Sudan, have you been concerned about the activities of your opposition people in Egypt? And did the two ministers discuss that?
Yes, actually, they discussed that. The Egyptians said that they never support the opposition. But some of them come to Egypt as Sudanese, but they have no actually offices there. They have no activity there. They are not supporting at least the armed movements against Sudan. And the same thing happened in Sudan as well. There is no opposition against Egypt there. But for this point specifically, there shouldn't be any sort of activity against each country from the opposition, especially the armed movements.
Recently, your government made a mandate for Egyptian men 19 to 50 to get visas before they come to your country. That's something that you have never done before. Why did your government decide to do that?
Because the Egyptians are doing the same. We asked them for both sides. In the past, the Sudanese used to go to Egypt without paying any sort of this before. And now we are paying. If you want to get a visa, it is not granted free. You have to pay. So we also made the same thing diplomatically. You can use the same way as you are being treated, you treat others. So this is sort of sovereignty action. It is not a post of a political action. If they came back to give our citizens granted free visa to Egypt, we will give Egyptians free visa to come to Sudan.
Now, the Egyptian president, Mr. Sisi, was in the United States recently to meet with President Trump. Your government has been trying to fight terrorism. Do you think President Bashir might look forward one day to come and meet President Trump?
You know, actually, we are looking for that. We want our relations with USA to be improved. And the negotiations this took place and then partial relief of the sanctions. We hope in July a total lifting of the sanctions would happen and the name of Sudan for our countries hosting terrorism will be also raised. But we look forward for the two presidents to meet. This is for the benefit of the people and for the benefit of the relation between Sudan and the USA.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The main opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, has expressed regrets that the parliament has given its consent to a decision by the National Electoral Commission to extend the date of the ongoing voter registration process. The Electoral Commission is compiling a voter list to be used for next year's general election. The new date will now be March 30, following the two-week extension. The ruling APC party says the SLPP's protest does not reflect the wishes of the general public. Dixon Rogers, an opposition parliamentarian, tells viewers Peter Clottey that the extension is a ploy by the ruling APC party to frustrate smaller opposition parties ahead of the elections.
It is a violation of the first timetable that we passed in parliament. And it's as a result of the fact that there are people are so disgusted with them that they have failed to register. Because when they find out that the opposition stronghold, that is the SLP stronghold, have registered more than their own stronghold, that was one of the reasons why they insisted that we extend the period of the registration. Because when it comes to the Western area and the North, that's where they perceived to be their strongholds. And the registration was so low in those areas that the people of Sierra Leone were forced to extend the registration period.
But some people are saying that why wouldn't the SLPP embrace the process of extension to allow more people to register to vote, because it is their constitutional duty. Because of the logistical challenges the Electoral Commission had during the registration process, why are you against this?
We are against it not because we don't want people to exercise their franchise, but because in the first place we told this nation, we told the census officer that the census was cooked. There is no way we are going to get the amount of people to register according to the census. Now, the percentage of those who are supposed to register according to NEC was given to them by Statistics Sierra Leone based on the people that were registered during the census. Now, because the census was cooked by the ruling government, we cannot get the projected figure of those who are supposed to register. So even if we extend for another 6 months, we will not have the figure.
So why would you even attempt, or why would you even engage the election if you know the government is organizing it as a referee and as a player at the same time?
In the first place, I want you to know that under this APC government, there is no true democracy. That is one. Secondly, they are deliberately micromanaging the process. As I'm speaking to you, they have not even paid the NEC officials that are supposed to do the registration. But having said that, they don't want to conduct this election because, one, they have lost favor with the people of this country. Deliberately, they have extended the period for the registration, not because people have not registered, but because they still want to justify the figures they gave us during the census. That is my argument.
Is the SLPP going to seek legal redress about this illegality that you spoke about?
Not necessarily in illegality, because it was brought to the well of parliament and we voted on it. But because they had the number, they took advantage of that. Now, we are going to allow the registration to go on because we don't have a second choice. But like you said, we are monitoring the process vigorously. The point I want to make here is the fact that the projected figure that NEC is expecting, which is 3.8 or 3.7 million, will not get that figure because the projection was made based on the census result. And as I said, the census result was seriously cooked in their favor so they can get more seats. Now they don't have the people to register. That is the point.
Dixon Rogers is a parliamentarian from the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clottey from the capital, Freetown. Today, Friday, is Global Youth Service Day, a day during which young people worldwide contribute their services to better their respective communities. It was started in the United States in 1988 to mobilize and celebrate young people who improve their communities through service. Mark Nelson is Executive Director of Pursuit for Positive Action Youth Organization of Liberia. He says Liberian youth have begun to gravitate toward the idea of service. In addition, Nelson said his group is also involved in encouraging young people to be a part of the democratic process by registering to vote in this year's presidential election.
This year, which is very, very important to us, we'll be going to Nima County. Tomorrow we'll be in Ganta City, Nima County. We'll be going to House of Hope Orphanage Home. We'll be visiting the young children. We're carrying gifts for them. We're carrying popcorn candy. We're going to read stories for them. We're going to play with them, have fun with them, and let them know that they are part of the community. which party are in Nimba, we are in Monrovia, but we care about everybody. We can reach everybody at the same time, but we can do our best to go to Tennessee as you grow up too, and you live in an orphanage home, or as you are in an orphanage home, you are also part of the larger society. We care about you and want you to be able to know that other people around the world care about you also.
Now, do you think the youth of Liberia understand and embrace the idea of service? Because too often, young people today won't pay for every little thing they do.
I tell you for a fact, James, when we started the project 2013, people didn't really understand what we were already saying. But based on different training programs, different radio programs, we are helping encouraging more youth organizations to get involved in the process. So people have grabbed the idea that if you live in a community, you live in a society, you have something to give back to that community you live in. Be it how small it can be. If it's a week, it's a day in a year, do something. So people understand that after, and we moving out. You see what? Every year we go to a particular county, places that we haven't been, so some of us haven't been to some of the county for years. So people are alone, all our groups, all our youth groups, all over the country do that.
Now, what do you think are some of the concerns of Liberian youth today? I mean, what are the pressing issues on their minds?
The pressing issue on the minds of young people, number one, and very, very cardinal, is education. Number two is job or employment. The young people are thirsty to get education, to better their life. They understand the importance of education, and they want to be having something to do to work for themselves, to have a system that they can get jobs. A lot of young people are unemployed.
This year is an election year in Liberia. Is your organization planning or playing any role, for example, helping to educate the young people about the democratic process?
Oh, yes, yes. We have worked with the National Election Commission since 2011. 2014, and just in February, we had a big awareness program on Camp Johnson Road, where we have placards, we have stickers, we have banners, encouraging young people above the age of 18 to register to be able to vote in the upcoming election, because this year's election is very critical for us, especially because most of all, I was born 1989, I'm 27 years old today, I was born during the heat of the war. So reaching the 2005 and seeing that peace came by the grace of God, and over 10 years we have enjoyed peace. We want to sustain that peace. We don't want our children to experience what we experienced. Well, the stories that even my mom tell me about what I was 1989 is so unbearable. I don't want the next generation of young people to face that. So that's why we have gone up, encouraging young people that this is your future, this is our future. Let us get ready to get involved in the electoral process. Let us vote for the people we think can take this stage from the stage that Manasseh has brought it to the stage that we want to see it in the next 6 years. Yes, we are involved in this process. We will remain engaged in this process until we get to know the next president of the Republic of Liberia.
It's so nice to talk with you, and thank you for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Good luck today.
Thank you so much, James Bobby. It was an honor talking on this platform.
Mark Nelson is the Executive Director of Pursuit for Positive Action Youth Organization of Liberia, who is speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. As stability slowly returns to the Central African Republic, some of the hundreds of thousands of people who fled the conflict and communal violence in 2013 and 2014 are coming home. Five young returnees have brought with them a new skill, capoeira. The martial art was developed centuries ago by African slaves in Brazil. It combines dance, music, and acrobatics. Zach Badoff reports for VOA from the orphanage in Bangui, where a group of Muslim and Christian youth is using capoeira to sow the seeds of peace.
Vicky Nelson Wakoro demonstrates proper techniques of capoeira. Wakoro learned the centuries-old practice while living in a refugee camp in the Democratic Republic of the Congo for 3 years.
We studied it a lot in camp since we didn't have school or anything like that. Capoeira was the only form of entertainment.
Wakoro eventually was certified at level 5 orange cord by an association in Kinshasa, where he and a group of other Central African refugees studied for 3 months last year. They returned to their homeland in November and began teaching these orphans in Bangui.
It's become a passion for us. Our country has just gone through a crisis, and the children are a bit traumatized.
We are here to help and give them a little advice, and I think that helps to calm them down.
Frankie Mongbazi's parents died several years ago. The 14-year-old arrived at this orphanage in September.
When I came here to the orphanage, I found a big family. I'm happy to do capoeira with my new brothers. At the beginning, it was difficult. But the teachers come to correct us and help us to improve.
The teachers say they try to impart the values of capoeira, tolerance, fair play, discipline, and respect. They hope it can help the children foster a more peaceful future for the country.
In the other martial arts like Taekwondo and Judo, they hit each other. But in the capoeira, we don't hit each other. And in each round, even if someone makes a hit, you have to say, oh, he touched by mistake. You hug each other and say, excuse me, excuse me.
The orphanage's director says he's noticed a difference since the kids started capoeira in November.
That's correspondent Zach Badov reporting from Bangui, Central African Republic. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin in Madagascar, where Kenya and Namibia will meet in the finals of the Under-20 Rugby African Championships, scheduled for Sunday in the capital, Antananarivo. Kenya pulled an upset by beating Zimbabwe 34-24. Gabriel Adero, captain of the Kenya Under-20 team, said the break worked in their favor as they had time to correct their mistakes to go on to pull the win.
After the first half, we went to the changing room and talked about our mistakes with the penalty and the spreading out wide. And when we were back in the game, we corrected all our mistakes.
Host Madagascar, despite the huge home support, could not match the superior quality of Namibia, who thrashed the host by 77-7. Namibia Under-20 head coach Roger Thompson said the game was won tactically.
We knew that if they're going to throw the ball around, they're going to score some tries. So we worked on our defense, we worked on our line speed to hang on to the ball a bit longer. And when Madagascar have the ball, to put them under pressure, force them to make mistakes.
Now to South Africa, where the Proteas of South Africa have picked a powerful squad for the Champions Trophy in England. Left-arm spinner Kashev Maharaj has earned his maiden one-day international ODI call-up to the 15-man Proteas squad for the ICC Champions. Cricket South Africa convener of selectors Linda Zondi says the selectors have picked a strong squad which covers all of the combinations and conditions on offer for the 8th edition of the 8th team circuit.
I think it's part of our dream to bring that silverware in for South Africa. And I think this is a start. I think the manner that the team has performed within the season has given us assurance and that confidence that we can.
Russell Domenigo, Proteas coach, believes the team have the ability to end a painful two-decade wait for silverware.
But I'm very confident with this group of players. There's so many young players that haven't experienced those type of disappointments before. Such a good energy amongst the group, such a good set of skills. We go there confident, but by no means arrogant or overconfident.
And now to football news. Ugandan Cranes national head coach Milutin Micho Sridijovic has started the process of screening out the players suitable to don the national team jersey during Sunday's regional tour of West Nile away in Pedha. 77 players of the expected 79 turned up for training, and coach Sridijovic says his assessment of the players will cover every aspect of the game.
Respecting the great people doing great job with University Football League, we have selected group of 42 players, and in FUVA Big League and in University League, we have looked at the coaches as our main source, because we have watched the game, but coaches are all the time with them. We respected the coaches, our colleagues, that they have proposed us those players.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you a good weekend.
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Salih. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Zimbabwe's persistent economic woes cloud its 37th Independence Day celebration. an in-depth discussion on Zimbabwe on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.